You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 10 February. We've got U.S. consumer inflation expectations due this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth. More strong U.S. jobs data, although maybe there were some bits about it that could worry Jerome Powell, and then more Trump worries. But we'll go back to what Nick said a week ago, which was don't panic, essentially. Keith McLachlan from Integral Asset Management on mine streaming. Funders get repaid from the commodity being mined. I'm interested in digging around this. Sibanye Stillwater did one of these early this year, late last. Charlene Lowe from the Beer Association of South Africa, size and impact of local and global beer economy. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlab Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. SA Inc. could be about to outshine U.S. tech. Local companies are set to benefit from improved consumer sentiment, while U.S. shares are on demanding ratings. Business Day, Netcare CEO delays retirement again. Richard Friedland will continue as group CEO until September 2026. But when he would have been there almost 20 years as CEO. Morning markets. U.S. was red on Friday. S&P down 1%. Nasdaq 1.3% lower. East is mostly green. Sydney's up 0.3%. Tokyo's down 0.1%. Hong Kong up 1.5%. And Tencent 1.7% higher. Commodities are mixed. We've got gold futures 2,902. Brent 75.10. Platinum is 1,000. Palladium is 973. Rand is 18.50. Bitcoin 96,500, and top 40 looking for a green open, but 20 points, which is about what, 0.03%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nick Kunze, Senior Portfolio Manager, Sunland Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning. Jobs data out of the U.S. on Friday. The headline number, which was the unemployment rate, it's marginally better at 4%. We did see some increase in wage growth coming through. Some revisions, although the revisions down were less than expected. A little bit Goldilocks, but my sense is, more than anything, it says to us the U.S. economy remains strong.
Morning, Simon. Morning to the listeners. Yeah, I mean, obviously, Friday's report, all the old geopolitical news are going around. It actually is quite an important number. We all keep an eye on it. And first glances, you'd have to say U.S. economy, doing what it's been doing against the other countries for years, and that's our performance. I mean, unemployment number, as you said, 4%. That's a tick down from 4.1. I think also, Simon, if you look at the broader sort of jobless measure, that moved down to 7.5, 0.2% better. And in fact, that's one of the lowest readings in years as well. I think overall, though, I guess it's a little bit hot, although it does give Mr. Powell a little bit, I guess, a bit of breathing room because, this implies that although the economy remains strong, inflation is sort of sticky. He doesn't have to just rush yet. So I think a little bit for everyone in this report, actually.
Yeah, that was my sense. A little bit for everyone. You can find yourself on either side. But if we look broadly at the economy, and we look at the results that have been coming through out of the U.S., I mean, they've mostly been good numbers. The big four are going to spend, what, $300+ billion on capex. But, I mean, broadly, results haven't, I mean, they've shown an economy that's growing and companies that are managing to do well within it.
Yeah, I think also must be taken as well, Simon. Obviously, this is a little bit backward looking, these numbers, sure, and these U.S. And also these, obviously these are fourth quarter earnings. Might find things get a little bit trickier with this dollar remaining so strong. I think a lot of these S&P 500 companies don't like a stronger dollar. We know they mostly earn the earnings from abroad. But overall, I mean, if you're in the U.S. market, you're exposed to the market. I wouldn't be jumping out just yet. They still seem to be pushing, and we know these markets, Simon. You've watched these things long enough. I mean, these things can stay expensive for longer than you wanted to. So I hear the talk about, these markets are pricey, the highest P's. Yes, they are. But a number like this, I mean, I wouldn't be hitting the sell button just yet.
Yeah, and you mentioned geopolitics. We chatted last week. This time last week, we thought there were tariffs coming on Mexico and Canada. They got scrapped just before going live. This week, we had the announcement from Trump that, what was it? All aid to South Africa is going to be cut. When I asked you last week about the proposed tariffs, your sort of your sense was, don't panic. And I think your exact words were, don't panic, call your broker. And I think that probably still probably is the story. I mean, we closed at all-time highs last week.
Yeah, and a lot of markets are at all-time highs. I walked in this morning and was sort of looking at the screens and I saw the headline news that Trump is going to do a 25% tariff possibly on all steel and aluminium imports. I looked at the trading numbers, or I looked at the sort of data points over in the Far East. Yes, Nikkei's a little bit weaker, but Singapore just hit an all-time high as well. So yeah, I think those who you know, are a little bit concerned, yes, it's going to be very, very volatile.
Yeah.
But just remember, these things should settle down in the next couple of weeks once these sort of parting, sort of these opening salvos are done. So then you can make. But don't exit just yet. This is just a lot of noise, and it's difficult to ignore it. But if you look at some of the data points, which I do, as you said, Simon, a lot of markets still on all-time highs, which doesn't apply that things are all down just yet.
Yeah. Maybe if you're fortunate enough, turn off your screens, go for a walk. Nick Kunza, Sanlam Private Wealth, always appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today is around that U.S. economy. As I said, it is the job starter was good. Overall economy looks strength. Are you confident about the U.S. economy? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Keith McLachlan from Integral Investment Managers. Keith, appreciate the early morning time. Mine streaming, I'd never heard of it. Sibanye Stillwater did a deal, was it late last year, early this year? And I remember then thinking this is quite cunning. Chatting with you last week, you're saying actually there's a lot more to mine streaming and it's a lot more popular. First question, what is the simple to understand definition of mine streaming or mining streaming?
Good morning, Simon. So perhaps because there's almost 2 types of streaming, there's things called royalty agreements and mm-hmm. then there's traditional streaming. Let's just put them in one basket. Mm-hmm. And the best way to think about them is they're financing agreements into mines. And unlike a traditional loan that you'll write money into the mine, they'll use it to build the mine, and they'll pay you an interest rate back.
Yeah.
Streaming and royalty agreements are typically based on revenue or production. What I mean by that is, for example, you'll write a loan into a mine, you say, instead of paying me back, pay me 2% of your revenue, or mm-hmm. allow me to buy 2% of your production at a significantly discounted cost, for example, 5% of spot price or something like that. So these sort of agreements, one, they fill the niche of specialized financing and funding for mines.
Mm-hmm.
But two, the companies that lend into these mines based on these agreements effectively earn off the commodity, a combination of the commodity and the production of that mine.
And again, depends how it's structured. But if and I'm thinking gold, futures trading above 2,900 this morning, all-time high. If you had done this in a gold mine, depending how structured, the mine streamer, the sort of funder could be doing quite very well.
Oh, definitely. I mean, like there's really 3 broad ways to invest in commodities. One, you can buy the physical commodity. Mm-hmm. Two, you can buy the guy who mines the commodity.
Mm-hmm.
But then you've got production risk, you've got inflation risk, there's community risk, there's resource, there are all sorts of risks involved in that. And then three, you can buy the streamer. And the streamer, although they have production risk, there's no cost line item to them. There's no mining inflation,
and
things like that. And it allows them to earn a very high margin that they can actually compound. So they get compounding. See, if you earn a lump of iron ore, a lump of gold, you know, 1,000 years from now, it'll still be the same lump. But the streamers actually have compounding because they can take those cash flows and reinvest them to other streaming agreements and other mines and the like. And interesting enough, When you and this is something the listeners can all go and do, pull up long-term price charts for mining companies, their respective commodities,
Yeah.
And most mining companies underperform their respective commodities. You know, and most streaming companies operate in the precious metal space and have a large exposure to gold. And the biggest ones being Franco-Nevada, Wheaton Precious Metals. Go pull up their long-term price charts relative to the gold price. They are actually some of the few mining and commodity orientated stocks out there that outperform their respective commodities. So it really, really is an interesting and unique space. It doesn't come without risk.
There is,
like I said, you tie into production risk here. Franco-Nevada, for example, had one of their big streaming agreements was Cobre Panama, that has effectively been nationalized in Panama. So they lose that production. I mean, they fight to get in the courts and the like. So you're tied into production risk, but you get the upside of the commodity without inflation risk and things like that. Streaming can be a very, very viable investment.
I take your point, and they can also sort of de-risk you to a degree in that a streamer, I imagine, would potentially have a number of different sort of processes, structures in place, and maybe between commodities, which you might not want, that's up to the investor, but they can de-risk it that way by striking deals with a couple of different mines.
Oh, definitely. I mean, first of all, the streaming and the big guys have actually quite diversified portfolios, diversified in terms of counterparty.
Yeah.
You want to deal with legitimate top-tier miners because, remember, if you have production risk, you've got to be certain that these guys can get into production. So, one, the diversified across mine. Mm-hmm. Two, diversified across counterparty. Three, diversified across geography. And although a lot of them are built out of the core gold and precious metal space, someone like, for example, Franco-Nevada, they've actually built an oil and gas component into their portfolio. And don't forget, over the last number of years, it's become harder and harder for example, oil, gas, coal companies to raise funding and financing to build mines. And the streamers have jumped into that space to fill the niche.
Yeah.
So they still weighted towards precious metals and particularly gold. But there's certainly components in the portfolios popping up that aren't just that.
A last quick question. I mean, you've mentioned Franco-Nevada. They are trading in Toronto in Canadian dollars. I mean, we can invest into these streamers. They're not, I mean, some of them are probably back room, not very often seen, but we can, as investors, we can hunt these down, do our research and potentially invest.
Oh, absolutely. Franco-Nevada is listed in Canada. I also think it's listed in America. There's Wheaton Precious Metals. They've particularly been doing well recently. Mm-hmm. Royal Gold, Sandstone Gold, Asseco Gold Royalties. There's a range of them. And most of them are listed either in Canada, America, dotted around. But there's certainly very, very investable options. And what's particularly impressive, you know, for example, looking at Franco-Nevada.
Yeah.
As a finance house, so it's effectively a specialist lender in this space, they actually have a net cash balance sheet. So some of these companies are superbly run. They've got really fantastic, almost, and in many cases, life of mine or royalty agreements and streaming agreements. And their balance sheets look bulletproof. So there's some proper investable options in this space.
Yeah, and you're right, Franco-Nevada, primary listing in Canada, but also listed in the US. We'll leave it there. Keith McLachlan, Integral Asset Investment Managers, appreciate the early morning time. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Charlene Lowe, CEO at the Beer Association of South Africa. Charlene, appreciate the time this morning. Some truly eye-opening numbers out from a recent report you and your colleagues have published. Beer globally about 17 trillion rand. In South Africa, 98 billion. I mean, it is a giant number. How does this compare with other sort of industries?
We're quite happy with the numbers that have come out. Indeed, it is displaying the very apparent sign that the beer industry is a huge contributor to this country's GDP. If one compares it with other industries, of course, you know, one looks at it within the top five or high ranking industries, such as your services sector, your mining, agriculture, So it stands right there at the top with some of those industries. I mean, at a 1.4% contribution to GDP, it's certainly not small change. And definitely, government is seeing the value of this particular sector.
And I imagine a large employer as well in the country, a country which has a chronic unemployment problem, but it must employ as an industry a vast number of people as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we're seeing globally, the beer sector supports about 33 million jobs worldwide. And I think in South Africa, over 200,000 jobs are supported by this particular sector. In a country like ours, where unemployment rates are on the rise, it's quite critical that these sectors are empowered by government so that they can continue to create jobs and meaningful jobs and value-adding jobs where employees can, in fact, then also stimulate the economy by being able to purchase and so forth.
In terms of taxation, 73 billion locally, that's 4.2% of government revenue. Beer, of course, we pay VAT, there's other taxes, there's corporate profits, staff will pay PAYE, but then there are the sin taxes. I mean, do you get a sense that policymakers are getting that balance right between the tax levels and letting an industry sort of grow and be sustainable?
We've been engaging with government for very many years because we do believe as an industry we are being overtaxed, and overtaxation is crippling or has a crippling effect on the industry, but also has very negative consequences to government and its ability to collect revenue. So, you know, if one looks at just the cost of manufacturing, you add taxation to that, the buying power of the average South African of that particular legal beer has become more and more difficult. But the reality of the matter is what that does is push consumers to illicit alcohol, from which government does not derive any revenue and any benefit. And so we continue to lobby and advocate for this industry to have fair, balanced, and really predictable taxation policies that are growth-enabling policies, because we're here to support government and make sure that we play our part as an industry within the economic context.
Is beer locally still growing? I mean, certainly I've seen moves to lower alcohol in some cases, and in some cases zero alcohol beers, which, you know, a decade or two ago was an absolute rarity. Is it still growth? Are South Africans drinking more beer, or are other alternatives also creeping in?
Well, certainly, I think one, I can firstly say that, you know, beer is one of the oldest drinks in the world, and its popularity is enduring. I can safely say that. You know, certainly there are other drinks that are creeping up in the market. Consumer palates are, in fact, changing. But beer by far still remains the most consumed alcohol beverage in South Africa and across the globe. And so it certainly remains one of the most enjoyed drinks. And the industry has remained resilient and is seeing growth. The numbers speak for themselves in the sense that if we talk to that 97 billion rand contribution to GDP, this is 36% more than what it was in 2019 when we last did an economic impact study. And so that just signifies that the contribution, the growth of the industry has since grown in leaps and bounds since we last assessed it in 2019.
And, you know, when we think beer, I mean, obviously we think SA Breweries is the biggie, but they're now owned by Anheuser-Busch. We think Heineken. We think global players. But beer, I would imagine, it might be a global brand. It might even be a global ownership, but it is going to be a local product and locally sourced. It's not something that we're flying or shipping around the world, I imagine, as a rule, and really is, and that plays to the taxation and the employment, but a very much a local product.
Oh, absolutely. I think I feel very proud to be associated with an industry that has 86% of its supplies locally sourced. And, you know, when we look at the numbers, the beer sector supports about 38,000 households in the agricultural industry. This includes also small-scale farmers. So the beer sector is definitely a key enabler in localizing production, in growing the agricultural sector. Barley farming in particular now contributes 1.4 billion to GDP because of the beer industry. And this is across all provinces from the Western Cape, Northern Cape, Northwest and Limpopo. This is the contribution essentially that the beer sector has within the agricultural space.
We'll leave it there. That's Charlene Lowe, CEO at Beer Association of South Africa. Really appreciate the time. That's it for today. On Friday, I was chatting with StandLib CEO Derek Masibi. We talked a lot about lots. I asked him about grey listing. Could we get off this year?
He said no. He said maybe, but he said probably next year. We asked you the same question, and would we get off? Over half said no, a long way to go. The rest of you were split between saying yes, we're improving, and the rest of you saying it is a close call. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, MoneyWeb websites in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and an awesome review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow, transversing Trumponomics.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.